We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome into the RotoWire Fantasy Basketball Pod. Nick Whalen, Kieran Sprecher here with you on this Tuesday, filling in for Dr. A. Those of you who are, you know, expecting to see an elder, knowledgeable man, that is not what you're getting today. Dr. A off. We'll be back on Thursday with Rick Kamla. But Kieran, looking forward to diving in on what we saw in the NBA last night. We got three more game twos coming our way tonight. First and foremost, we are presented to you by Prize Picks, a site that I use on a daily basis and have some entries already locked and loaded for tonight's slate. Prize Picks is the best way to get action on sports in more than 30 states across the country, including the great state of Wisconsin, where Kieran and I reside. Prize Picks is very simple to play. I can make my picks, submit my entry in less than 60 seconds. All I do is I pick more, I pick less on two or more stats, and I watch the winnings roll in. Looking at the slate tonight, for one, if you're listening to this live, there's a limited Karl-Anthony Towns promotion going on right now over on Prize Picks. We're getting a nice discount on his points projection tonight, which is sitting at 14.5 with that promo. But you got only 54 minutes and 18 seconds to take advantage of that. So make sure you go lock that one in, pair it with one or two other projections that you like. I'm looking at Damian Lillard and Tyrese Haliburton combined assists, number sitting at 17. Tyrese Haliburton at 8 in game one. Pacers did not shoot the ball well. I think this could be a 10, 11, 12 assist night for him. Would expect 7 or 8 for Damian Lillard. So that's one of my leans. I like Ivica Zubac and Luka Doncic, another combo here, the more on 20 rebounds. And I also like the less on Bobby Portis points plus rebounds, all the way up at 29.5. We'll talk more about that projection and that game later on. But those are some of the initial leans. Tons of options over at Prize Picks. You can find just about any stat projection you want, especially during the playoffs. Quick withdrawals, easy gameplay, an enormous selection of players and stat types. Like we just said, that's what makes Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. And here's the best part. You go download the Prize Picks app, or you can play it on your browser. Use our code ROTOPOD, ROTOPOD. That'll get you a first deposit match up to $100. That's ROTOPOD, ROTOPOD. First deposit match up to $100. You put in $100, Prize Picks will give you $100 to play with on their app. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Prize Picks. Again, go check it out. Roto Pod. All right, Kieran. A lot to discuss last night. I think probably the best night of basketball we've had. We've only had three since the playoffs began, but we had a few blowouts. We had a lot of home teams taking care of business over the weekend. And, you know, that was, again, the case last night. Home teams have now moved to 11-0 straight up through the first few days of the playoffs. We'll start with Orlando-Cleveland. We'll throw some charity their way. This has not been... It's not been the greatest series to watch, I'll tell you that. I think most of us had this circled as the, all right, you know, it's noon on Saturday. Maybe I'm not necessarily planning my whole day around this. I could catch up. I could watch the condensed game. Rough start to the series for the Orlando Magic. They did survive a Jalen Suggs scare. You know, ended up coming back into that game last night after what initially looked like it might have been a serious knee injury. But the stat that really jumps out to me, Kieran, and I think really tells the story so far for Orlando, 11 of 44 on wide open three-pointers so far through two games.
Yeah, absolutely. Every time you read the prize pick bonus codes, I just think of Johnny Manziel money sign. But yeah, absolutely incredible slate of games last night. A lot of people would say the playoffs haven't even started yet because no away team has won yet. But obviously last night was electric, and I think we're in the full swing of things. I know you hit the nail on the head saying the Saturday noon game, right? Like the first playoff action we get. I know the play-in, it doesn't count as the postseason. A lot of people want to call it that. But the first postseason game, you're all jazzed up for it, and you're like, oh, we got the Magic and the Cavs. I've still been pretty entertained by this. I'm watching Paolo and Franz. Like, they have a bright future. I obviously not playing very well right now. Paolo's turnovers have been pretty uncharacteristic. He took a huge step forward as a playmaker this year, but Evan Mobley has just proved to be a menace against him. So that's been a little disappointing. You said wide open threes, any type of shot from distance has been a struggle for the Magic. That's going to be difficult to overcome. I have been impressed with Franz, that is, not his brother Mo. Franz has made multiple threes in both games so far. That was like a well-known thing towards the end of the fantasy season where he just wasn't even shooting threes. I had him on a couple of teams. He torpedoed my 3-point in our stake league. So it's nice to see him have some confidence with the shot, but no one else can. Gary Harris struggled in the first one. He had a couple shots in game two. Cole Anthony hasn't done anything. Despite being a young team, the Magic have actually been pretty like physical with another physical team in the Cavs. They've attempted like 30 free throws. They're playing pretty well in the paint. It's just the Cavs haven't even hit their stride yet either. That's the sad thing. Like, you know, I'm trying to find any bright spots for the Magic I can, but in reality, they've lost both games basically wire to wire, and the Cavs haven't even like really hit their stride offensively. My main concern for the Cavs going into the postseason was Donovan Mitchell's health. I've been on this podcast with Dr. A and you and Alex, and I've probably mentioned it on each one of those. On Mitchell's had a quote where he was like, 9 times out of 10, like, everything is fine. And then that 10th time, it's nothing. Well, he kind of like, with Joel Embiid, you know, the off the backboard dunk, he was kind of trying to prove it to himself. Like, I can do this. I'm back to being the MVP Joel. I think that Donovan Mitchell dunk early in the first quarter of game one, that was like his moment to himself. Like, all right, I'm back. I can do it. Another great game for Mitchell in game two. He kind of struggled after a really hot start. So that might be some like, you know, wearing down, that injury is still lingering a little bit. But for all intents and purposes, I think the Cavs are probably going to sweep this. Maybe the Magic can get one at home and make it a gentleman's sweep. But the Magic are a fun team, and I think Franz and Paolo will be back. And like you said, Jalen Suggs avoided the injury scare. He said he's going to play game three. So another bright star for the Magic, hopefully, for a couple of years.
Yeah, I said on the pod yesterday, Cavs in five. I think the Magic can maybe steal one of these next two, excuse me, in Orlando. And, you know, what's if you're trying to find something encouraging for the Magic, it's certainly not the offensive rating, which is 88.5 through two games. But they're playing good defense, right? I mean, the Cavs offensive rating is only 101, you know, and I think Orlando's doing what it needs to do offensively. But you can't win playoff games, you know, when you're scoring 83 points, right? Or 86 as they put up last night. But they've held the Cavs to 97 and 96. So I think they're doing things that they need to do on the defensive end. The shots are just not falling. The bench units for Orlando are getting crushed right now. Markel Fultz is basically out of the rotation. He only played 6 minutes last night, didn't play much in game one either. Cole Anthony has yet to hit a shot in this series. He was a minus 13 last night. Joe Ingles has not really given them anything off the bench. And, you know, the Cavs played a pretty tight rotation. They only played 8 guys last night. And, you know, got a nice effort from Isaac Okoro, who came in and hit a couple threes. Caris LeVert, didn't have a huge game by any means, but 2 of 4 from three, you'll take that when you're putting so much of the offensive workload on Garland and Mitchell. And I think Evan Mobley, as you mentioned, has played really well, especially defensively in this series. Jared Allen has given Orlando a lot of problems. You know, they're starting small right now. They're bringing Wendell Carter off the bench. They're bringing Mo Wagner off the bench. They're not really starting a true center. They're rolling Jonathan Isaac out there, and they're getting crushed on the boards, right? Orlando actually did get 11 offensive boards for themselves last night, but gave up 15 offensive boards, 9 to Jared Allen, who's feasting so far in this one. I mean, 16 and 20 last night with 3 assists, 2 steals, and 3 blocks. So I don't think this series, it doesn't feel like Orlando's going to climb back into it, certainly. I don't think it's an indictment on where this franchise is headed. I think it's a reminder that they need more shooting, right? You know, I was talking to our guy, Brandon Kravitz, who covers the Magic down in Orlando. He'll be on the pod tomorrow, so we'll go deep on this. But he said, you know, fans in Orlando are already hitting him up. Like, here's what we need to do this summer. We need to trade for Anthony Simons. We need to go sign someone like Malik Monk. You know, that's kind of what this team is missing. They have the defense, right? You have your future superstar in Paolo Banchero in place. You have, you know, Franz Wagner is your number two. I think you'd like to upgrade that. I think ideally he's a number three long term, but this is still a team that took a huge step forward year over year. And, you know, something I mentioned on this pod a few weeks ago is I actually think this was a pretty underrated regular season from Paolo Banchero, right? There's so much young talent around the league now that we can't dole out credit to everybody every single day. But Paolo Banchero was far and away the best player on a 47-win Magic team that not many people saw playing this well. So I still think, you know, it's no moral victories in the NBA, but this still goes down as a pretty big leap for Orlando overall.
Yeah, absolutely. The Magic were like never on national TV either, so I feel like a lot of like the average NBA fan wasn't tuned in to what Paolo was doing on a nightly basis. His mid-range game, his three-point shot has been off in the playoffs. Obviously, you know, everyone on the Magic hasn't shot, but he shot pretty well from three-point for the player that he is. His mid-range game, his playmaking game, I love Paolo moving forward. I think he can be like, I think he has the upside to be a top 10 player. I don't think he's there yet, but like he definitely can be a superstar in this league. Another stat about Jared Allen and his dominance so far, the Cavs are outscoring Orlando by 13.3 points per possession when he's on the court. He's just been absolutely fantastic. And there was a lot of talk after the Cavs lost to the Knicks last year in the playoffs, like, can Allen be a starting center for a team that goes deep in the playoffs and whatever? And he admitted to a lot of like, you know, mental side of it. Like, can I be that dominant player? So a huge step forward for him right away. The other thing is if Mitchell is the Donovan Mitchell that we know, is he a top three player in the East? Is he a top five player in the East? And how far can he take this Cavs team? If he's the Utah Donovan Mitchell and you have Evan Mobley and Jared Allen dominating the paint, this Cavs team could be dangerous. And I know it's the Magic, and we've kind of highlighted their deficiencies so far. So I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but I was really down on Mitchell because of the injury concerns, but he's kind of like making me eat my words there. So I got to give him his props.
Cavs minus 700 right now at DraftKings to win the series, which seems like a lot. It is, but relatively speaking, you know, Denver is minus 1,100. You know, they're up 2-0 on the Lakers. OKC is up 1-0 in their series. They're minus 1,200. Boston's up 1-0. They're minus 20,000 to win the series. So we're kind of splitting the difference with the Cavs. The only pushback I would have about what you just said, yeah, Cavs are playing well. I do think Donovan Mitchell is probably the fourth or fifth best player in the East when healthy. The problem is they're going to play the Celtics in round two. I just don't see that going well. Maybe you take a game, but there's a buzzsaw waiting for you in round two. I think that's the ceiling for the Cavs.
For sure. My counter to that is Max Struss kind of has the Celtics numbers, so you never know what Struss could do. And the other thing about the Cavs is like George Niang, you mentioned Okoro, LeVert, Struss. These guys, like, they haven't really hit their stride yet, and the Cavs are cruising because of their defense and guys like Allen and Mitchell stepping up.
Yeah, I'm not saying they can't give Boston a little bit of trouble, but I think you're staring down the barrel of a brutal matchup in round two. And I think it will be interesting. The results of that series ultimately, I think, could go a long way toward determining what Cleveland does this summer. And I really don't usually like when teams, you know, base their entire plan off of how one series goes. But, you know, if they're embarrassingly swept by Boston in four games, I think that, you know, maybe pushes them toward, all right, do we have to reconsider the Garland Mitchell pairing? You know, it just never quite worked out to the degree that we thought it would. But either way, I think the season ends in round two for the Cavs.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Let's talk about the two far more exciting games we saw last night. Probably the two most exciting games of the playoffs so far. We got an ultra-rare double bang out of Mike Breen. Ultra-rare. The only other double bang I can remember, and chime in the comments if I'm missing one, was I think it was like 2016 or 2017 when Curry hit that crazy like 45-footer to beat the Oklahoma City Thunder. I specifically remember it was when ESPN was trying to debut like the light-up three-point line. That quickly went away for good reason. That's the only other double bang that I can remember, and Dante DiVincenzo earned it, man. With that shot late. Bizarre sequence, of course. I thought Tyrese Maxey was fouled at least once by Jalen Brunson, and I thought the foul actually came before the inbounds pass. You know, and this is, of course, you know, Sixers fans going in and breaking it down frame by frame, but he was being held pretty significantly by Brunson. Loose ball in the corner. Everybody's kind of looking around, like even Josh Hart, who ended up recovering the loose ball. There was a pause there where he's like, oh, I guess let's just play on. Kicks it out to DiVincenzo, misses the first three. Incredible rebound by Isaiah Hartenstein to dive in there. Tobias Harris just not blocking anybody out. Good for him. Get the second chance. DiVincenzo hits the second one. And all of a sudden, here are the Knicks now with a 2-0 lead in this series. You know, Philly, right to be devastated, right? We saw Joel Embiid after the game, head down. Barkley was getting on him for that, which, whatever. I mean, I actually kind of agree with Charles on that specific instance, but not that big of a deal. Obviously, you're devastated after a loss like that. Incredible game from Tyrese Maxey, considering we didn't even know if he was going to play 45 minutes before tip-off. I mean, he got off to a great start, 35 points, 10 assists, 9 boards for Maxey, 5 of 11 from beyond the arc. Embiid, despite, you know, getting progressively more hobbled as this game went along, 34 for him, 10 boards, 6 assists. He played well. You know, the one big question I had about Philly coming in, where's the third option? There was no third option last night. It was Kyle Lowry in game one. It was Nick Batum in the play-in game. You cannot depend on that if you're Philly. Nobody else remotely stepped up. Tobias Harris had a couple nice moments in the first half, was completely invisible in the second, and the Knicks just do what they do, man. This is an incredibly fun team to watch. I find myself, I have nothing against the Sixers. I don't care who wins the series, but I find myself rooting for this Knicks team.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think it's because they play for their coach, and I don't know if you saw the Athletic with their anonymous player poll, but Thibodeau is 66%, 47% of the players said that they would not want to play for Tibbs. And I wonder if that is going to be changing anytime soon with how far the Knicks go. You mentioned all of the big time plays. One thing that really stood out in that game that kind of got overshadowed by the last minute of craziness was with like 2:30 left, the Knicks were up one and DiVincenzo gets an offensive board and it looks like he just gets mauled by like 4 Sixers. Right. And they call a foul and it's like, all right, I don't think they're in the bonus quite yet, but they're going to have the ball back up one, you know, only a couple minutes left and a surprise challenge from Nick Nurse. And they actually got it. I was like, it looked like he got mauled. I felt in the moment, I was like, this is a terrible challenge. Like they're going to the free throw line, like blah, 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 whatever. And then after that moment, it was just an onslaught from Tyrese Maxey, and they took a commanding lead, and then, like, it's over, and then another crazy dramatic switch. The double bang that you said, I saw a couple different tweets last night and this morning. I think they said, like, three or four – like, one tweet said three, and one tweet said there's been four double bangs. So I'm not really sure what the stats are on that, but that Steph Curry moment was iconic, and I remember watching it. I was I worked at a bar in college, and after he hit the shot, I'm yelling. I'm like, that was a 40-footer. And everybody there was like arguing about exactly how deep that Curry 3 was. He just walked across half court and chucked it. So absolutely incredible. DiVincenzo, and going back to like the Tibbs thing, so many guys are just having career years for this Knicks team. And I think that's why it's easier to cheer for them, right? Like Hartenstein steps up with Robinson going down. Deuce McBride, Miles McBride, like goes off when Brunson kind of like tweaked his leg late in the season. Josh Hart, DiVincenzo, like all of these guys are just having phenomenal career years. And it's fun watching them play. After like being in the league for a while, McBride hasn't been in the league for a while, but you know, all those guys being in the league for a while and not really establishing themselves as superstars. I've was cheering for the Knicks a lot this season because I had Brunson on a lot of my fantasy teams. And so I continued that into the postseason. As for the 76ers, you nailed it. They just are not getting any help. Kelly Oubre was supposed to, like, I kind of thought like he was like kind of like the dark horse guy, and Embiid even said that, saying like, you know, he didn't even mention Tobias as a number three. He's like, Kelly's been our third best player a lot of times. So you're not getting anything from Kelly. You're not getting anything from Tobias. And that while the Lowry contributions are nice, he had a couple big threes last night too. If you're relying on Kyle Lowry to be your number three in 2024, it's not a good path to be on.
That's exactly right when it comes to Lowry. I mean, he's been rejuvenated. He's had some of his better games of the season in a Sixers uniform, some of his better games of the last few years, but he's not your number three option in a competitive series like this. I do think Philly has defended well. I don't think that's necessarily been an issue for the Sixers. I think scoring has been more of a problem, and obviously the Knicks have played good defense as well, but Jalen Brunson is 16 of 55 from the field through two games, and it's a little jarring to see him miss, especially in the 10 to 12 foot range. You know, I mean, Kelly Oubre did a great job, I thought, on him defensively. Not somebody you necessarily think of as a great defender, but when he was on Brunson last night, I thought he did a good job. Brunson has to work for everything, man. He's had to work for every single bucket he's getting. I mean, even it bounced in that three that allowed the Knicks to climb within one possession before the late DiVincenzo three. But I think what worries me if I'm the Sixers is, all right, we've come up short in two games. We certainly felt like we should have won game two. We're down 0-2 in the series. Yeah, it's shifted back to Philly. That should be advantage us. But the best player for the Knicks has not played anywhere near the level that he played during the regular season. So I just it kind of feels like Brunson is a ticking time bomb in a good way if you're the Knicks, right? Where you're like, we feel lucky that we've survived these two games with Jalen Brunson shooting 27%.
Yes, absolutely. I think the stat was Brunson had never in his career attempted – at least 25 shots and not made at least 10 of them. And he's done that in both of the games so far. So like literally his two worst shooting performances of his career, and somehow the Knicks pull out two wins. I think I also got to mention Mitchell Robinson game one played a fantastic on Joel Embiid, but then in game two, it was Hartenstein. So the Knicks just have the mix and match against Embiid. And like you said, Embiid's kind of hobbled. Like I wouldn't say hobbled. Like he's playing really well. He's putting up numbers, but you can tell like on defense, he's not getting up on the screens. Like he's laboring up and down the court. And so like you look at Giannis and you look at Kawhi Leonard, and they're willing to sit out a game or two, probably more, to see. And like, you're not good. Even if the Sixers win this like series with Embiid playing, are they going to be championship contenders with Embiid playing this way? And what is the setback if Embiid the catastrophic thing that happened in game one, if that actually turns into an injury and it impacts him for next year? Like I want to see him play as a fan, right? But if I was a Sixers fan, I'd be like, I want to see Embiid play next year when we hopefully get Tobias out of here, you know? So I think there's a real like give and take right here with the Sixers and Embiid and how far they want to push him.
I just think you have to play him. If he's willing to go out there and the training staff clears him and says, look, this is not something where you're at an extreme risk for re-injury, you're not winning the series. You have no chance to win the series without Joel Embiid, right? And he's 30 years old, too. It's like, I mean, this happens every single year of the playoffs with Embiid, where we go down the same narrative. It's very similar to Kawhi in that even if he stays healthy for much of the regular season, which he did last year, didn't do this year, his body tends to break down at the wrong time. And I don't think you could keep playing for the future if you're the Sixers at this point. And I don't know if it matters. I mean, you need Embiid at 100%, not only to win this series, but to feel good about beating Milwaukee or Indy and certainly the Boston Celtics if you were to make the Eastern Conference Finals. But I just, it feels like they're kind of running out of time with Embiid. And I'm not saying he's going to be out of the league in 5 years, but these injuries accumulate, man. You know, and I don't think it's a coincidence that somebody who had the injury issues he did early on has continued to kind of suffer similar injuries to his lower body. Those all kind of drag on you as you get into your 30s. So they're between a rock and a hard place. I understand what you're saying, but I just think, you know, you're basically taking yourself out of the series if you decide not to play Joel Embiid. I do think it's fair to question, you know, should he have maybe sat out more games towards the end of the regular season? Maybe this is just as good as it gets. Who knows? That would be my guess. But Sixers now in a hole as the series shifts to Philly. Knicks minus 450 to win the series. That's a surprising price to me. I think the Knicks are winning this. Sixers plus 350 if you think they can climb back into it. Let's do Lakers Nuggets. Good night if you're a LeBron hater. Good night if you're a Nuggets fan. Not a great night for the Lakers, man. This felt like the death knell to me for this series. And look, obviously we've seen LeBron come back before. You could bring up 2016 if you really want, but I don't think the Lakers come back from this, man. They're up 20. You just felt all along watching this game. I was texting with some of my buddies, and I think the Nuggets cut it to like 16 early in the third. And I was like, I want to go on the record. The Lakers are losing this game. We have seen this before. And then, of course, the Lakers go 7+ minutes at the end of the third quarter without a single field goal. With just one field goal. I think there's an Anthony Davis bucket in there and then a couple LeBron free throws. He scored 4 points over the final 7 minutes of the second quarter. All of a sudden, it's a 10-12-point game going into the fourth, and you just felt like the momentum had shifted toward Denver. I don't see the Lakers coming back from this. I think it's one of those situations that reminds me a ton, Kieran, of all of the LeBron battles against the Warriors over the years. And I'm not even saying the Durant Warriors, because that always felt unfair from the jump. But you think back to like the 2015 finals, obviously the start of the 2016 finals, and then, of course, once Durant arrived, you know, game one of the 2018 finals, for example, when, you know, LeBron plays arguably his best individual game of his career, and it wasn't enough, you know. And the Nuggets to me have that same air of invincibility right now, where no matter how much they're down, you know, they're going to generate good shots. You know, those shots are going to start falling. They shot the ball horrendously, right? We talked about Orlando not hitting open threes. Denver hasn't been a whole lot better. Through two games in the series, the Nuggets are 11 of 42 on wide open threes, according to NBA.com/stats. And that to me is why I say this series feels over to me, because I think the Lakers outplayed the Nuggets significantly last night, save for that, you know, 7 to 8 minute stretch at the end of the third and early in the fourth. They go 13 of 30 from beyond the arc, the Lakers, 43%. They shot 49% from the field. Denver shot 23% from three, 44% from the field, and yet they win this game. And it was kind of the same story when you look at how the Lakers outplayed Denver in the first half of game one as well. The Lakers, I think, have played two pretty good games. You know, obviously, you get D'Angelo Russell going 5 for 5 from three to start this one. Really got the Lakers off to a good start. This team cannot finish games. And look, if you're not winning this one, I don't know what game in the series you're going to win, right? Maybe you get a bump at home and you take one in LA. But this last night to me just felt like the Nuggets saying, we're still your big brother, man. You're not beating us.
Yeah, absolutely. The thing that I had highlighted was Denver was way out of sync. They committed 9 turnovers. Like, you know, they only had 6 in game one. So 9 is a 50% increase. Like, yeah. And like, you nailed it. Like, the Lakers played fantastic for most of the game. They had the, you know, the contributions from D'Lo. It looked like they were cruising. And then there's just that brief lull. And it happened in game one too. Like, the Nuggets weren't hitting shots in the first half. And then KCP finally hit some shots in the, I think it was like the third quarter, he hit like 4 in a row or 4 of like the in 5 possessions or something. And that's where they went on the run. And it's the Nuggets are just like a predator, man. They just like wait around and then they wait for you to, like, you know, take a break or hesitate on defense or one thing. And then it's just boom, snap, you're done. And that's boa constrictor like, right? And it looked like it was going to happen early in that fourth quarter, right? Like, you were like, okay, here we go again. And the Nuggets came all the way back. It was like a 2-point game. And then LeBron goes off, hits a couple threes, gets to the bucket. And you're like, okay, maybe the Lakers can withstand this one. And then the Nuggets fought right back. I want to give Peyton Watson so much, like, credit right now. He's not going to transform into a superstar anytime soon, but he plays that bench role fantastic. He plays great defense. He was team high plus 11 in only 12 minutes last night. That's pretty incredible when you're sharing a court with LeBron James, Anthony Davis, you know, Jokic, Murray, like, and Peyton Watson is like having that big of an impact. Christian Brown, 5 for 8 from the field, 10 points and 13 misses, or in 13 minutes, all of his misses were from three. So like he was really efficient in the paint. Like it seems like there's always a guy to step up. This team is always going to play their role, and they aren't going to like get upset, or they aren't going to sulk in the corner, or they aren't going to do whatever. They're all going to be ready for when that moment happens and when Jokic finds them or whatever. There was a lot of matchup changes in this one. Aaron Gordon guarding Anthony Davis and Jokic guarding Rui, and like all of these like chess piece moves and whatever. And it feels like the Lakers are always just going to be two steps behind, because Jokic is just going to find, and even if they find something that works, Jokic is like, okay, give me a quarter and I'll figure that out. Or call one timeout and I'll get it figured out, and then you'll move on to your next thing. Jamal Murray wasn't even like really that great in this game until that last shot too. I don't know. Michael Porter Jr., his brothers are a whole sideshow in and of itself, but that hasn't impacted his play at all. 6 for 10 from three last night. Just like you said, this felt like a two-game loss. This felt like they were down 1-0, and now it's like, okay, it's toast. If we lose one more game, it's over. Yeah. Terrible blow. Fantastic game to watch. Super entertaining. Super exciting. And you mentioned Barkley talking about Embiid's, you know, mannerisms after the game. LeBron and Anthony Davis whining and leaving the press conference early, like that's just a bad look. That looks like you gave up already. You have guys like Rui Hachimura, who I was really high on. He has not played well. Austin Reeves.
Rui Hachimura killed the Lakers last night. That was an F-minus game from start to finish for Rui. He should not have played 38 minutes. He was killing them.
Missed layups, missed defensive assignments.
Three missed layups and a missed dunk.
Anthony or Austin Reeves like has just been quiet. Yeah. Like where I want to see like the swaggy Austin Reeves, the I'm him Austin Reeves, like go make some plays.
So he's getting shut down.
I don't really see any of their supportive players like stepping up in game three or game four. So this is tough. It's only 2-0, but it feels like 3-0.
Yeah. That's the series is over. I mean, Aaron Gordon, Jamal Murray, KCP, Peyton Watson, Justin Holiday, Reggie Jackson, Christian Brown went 0-20 from three combined last night. 0-20 from three from those guys, and Denver finds a way to win this game. But you're not coming back from this if you're the Lakers. Absolutely had to take one of these first two before the series shifts to LA. I do think we got to give credit to the Nuggets defensively. And I actually don't have a huge problem with what LeBron and AD said after the game. I mean, that's kind of what you'd expect for both of those guys at this point. Like, I'm not shocked. Tends to be how they react in these situations. I don't think it was overly slanted in favor of Denver, but there were not a lot of calls made in this game around the rim. I thought, you know, the reversal on the D'Angelo Russell play where he was very clearly smacked in the face. That one to me was pretty shocking to see the refs just kind of ignored that part of the play. I thought LeBron had a couple of gripes. You know, there was the turnover late where he very clearly, you know, was hit on the arm, no call there. But I thought it was relatively equal for both sides. And we're seeing this across the playoffs. We saw it a lot in the Knicks Sixers game as well. If guys are flying into the lane and there's multiple defenders there, you're not seeing the same calls that we were earlier in the season. And you know, that trend started after the All-Star break, but it feels like it's ramped up in the playoffs. Like they are letting a ton of contact go at the rim. I think you brought up Austin Reeves, extremely quiet, right? It's not like you can't say he's played poorly necessarily. I mean, he missed some wide open threes that would have been huge for the Lakers last night, but he's just been put in the torture chamber by KCP. You know, whenever KCP was on him last night, Reeves just couldn't do anything. I mean, was borderline, you know, losing his dribble. It just kind of had to stand in the corner because he could not get by him. And I thought the Nuggets were able to get away with a ton of defensive versatility here. Like Jamal Murray was guarding LeBron at times late in this game. That should be a matchup that LeBron could exploit. He was getting by Murray, but he wasn't finishing.
There was like two instances where he backed down Murray and then he tried to like make a pass. And one of them like went right over someone's head as they were cutting. It's like, no one's expecting you to pass in that situation, my guy.
Well, he was struggling to finish at the rim throughout the game. I think it was a vintage LeBron effort. The two threes, you know, late that felt like they were going to push the Lakers to win in this game. The huge dunk over Murray in transition, which then somehow turned into a Michael Porter Jr., you know, three pointer with two guys in his face. I mean, that's when I was like, all right, Denver's officially winning this game. There's no question whatsoever. If that shot's going down, Denver's winning. MPJ has been fantastic, man. 6 of 10 from three. Two of his misses last night came on the same possession where he had two wide open shots. I mean, he continues to hit really difficult ones. And, you know, I think you look at the position to position matchup and it's not fair to ask Rui Hachimura to like outplay Michael Porter or even outplay Aaron Gordon. He's not as good as those guys. But I think that's been the biggest, you know, position loss for the Lakers. Rui Hachimura has just been nowhere near where what Gordon and Porter are giving you up front and on the wing for Denver. Like, Rui can't be losing that matchup as badly as he has through these first two games, and especially last night when he was just absolutely brutal. Like I mentioned, the three missed layups, the missed dunk, you know, mishandling a pass from LeBron that should have been another layup, missed a wide open wing three that would have been huge for the Lakers late in the fourth quarter. And it's easy to say for me that he shouldn't be out there, but you know, who's the other option, right? Are you playing Jackson Hayes, who's really just an energy rebounder at this point? You know, Torian Prince actually was okay last night, but I think they've lost a little faith in him. They should be getting Jared Vanderbilt back, it sounds like, for game three. I don't know if that really matters. He hasn't played in forever. It's a nice defensive piece, but you know, you brought up Peyton Watson. I think when we think of Denver, you think of Jokic, you know, kind of spreading the ball around. You think of Jamal Murray going off. You don't necessarily think of the Nuggets as this great lockdown defensive team. There's no real weaknesses in this lineup, right? There are no matchups that you feel like you can exploit. And Jamal Murray should be that guy. And the Lakers were not able to do that last night. And if you're bringing, you know, someone like Christian Brown, who's a solid defender, you know, for the type of player he is, Peyton Watson's a very good defender. Justin Holiday's a good veteran defender. Like there are no matchups that, you know, the Lakers could look at and say, all right, when this guy's on the court, we're just going to target the hell out of him. Whereas on the Denver side of things, I thought Austin Reeves was brutal defensively last night. Obviously D'Angelo Russell, not a good defender. It's, you know, beating Denver in any series is going to be extremely, extremely difficult. You need to play your A-level game four times out of seven to do that. And you know, the Lakers just have too many holes right now, I think, to pull this off. So not surprising to see the Denver Nuggets now as minus 1,100 favorites to win the series. Lakers 7-1 as that one shifts back to LA. We will get game three on Thursday night. Let's talk a little bit about the slate tonight, Kieran. And we got three bangers. These are like the three series that I think I'm most excited about, partially, you know, because we are Milwaukee Bucks fans. So I don't know that Pacers Bucks without Giannis is all that compelling nationally, but it is here. Let's start with Suns Timberwolves, which is the early game tonight at 7:30 Eastern. You know, I was not surprised that the Suns were favored to win this series coming in. I think when you just look at the headline talent, when you look at the experience of guys like Booker, who's played in the finals, Durant, who's played in a bunch of finals, it makes sense. We've seen Minnesota come up short in the playoffs before. Suns, despite dropping game one by 25, they're still just plus 125 to win the series. Minnesota minus 150. We didn't see as much movement in this one as we did in some of the other series. Very curious to see if Minnesota can replicate that. They came out with an energy that I did not really expect, right? You know, based on the personnel, maybe it shouldn't be surprising, but we've seen this team come out really tentatively in playoff series in the past. And, you know, this is one where if Minnesota wins tonight, I just don't think you can say it's over because of the personnel on the Phoenix side. But as always, when you drop game one and you're, you know, you're the lower seeded team, this starting to feel like a must win for Phoenix.
Yeah, absolutely. I do kind of agree that it is a must win for Phoenix. I was also not surprised that Phoenix was favored, but I was going to take advantage of Minnesota being underdogs. I think Phoenix has the opportunity and the personnel to create mismatches against the T-Wolves defense, even though the Timberwolves have a fantastic defense. I think Phoenix has enough weapons to create mismatches, and I just didn't think that they were going to go to those mismatches or go to the like those adjustments right away in game one. The biggest thing for me is they need to get Rudy Gobert out of the paint, right? You saw the Clippers a couple years ago against Utah when Rudy's last year there, Terrence Mann scored like 39 points in that game seven. And it was all just spread it out, make Rudy guard on the perimeter. Whoever is being guarded by Rudy, attack him, right? And there's going to be nothing in the paint. But Devin Booker was just really bad in this game. I mean, like for his standards, right? 5 of 16 from the field, 18 points. There was multiple times where I felt like he could have gotten to the rim when Rudy was guarding him and he settled for a jumper. There was also a lot of Nurkic or Eubanks just kind of sitting on the block and then him getting past his initial defender and the guy being there. And it's like, you got to like be smart about where you attack. And I get that when you have guys like Devin Booker and Kevin Durant, it's a lot of like they can get a shot up over anyone. But this defense is too good to just rely on that. You got to figure out ways to attack it. And mm-hmm. I think the way that you attack it is you have Eubanks or you just don't play Eubanks, actually. You have Nurkic play in the non-Rudy Gobert minutes, and you have him attack Karl Anthony Towns because he actually has an advantage down low on Cat in those situations. And when Gobert is in there, you got to have Royce O'Neal. You got to have Eric Gordon out there. And you just got to have five shooters, and you got to trust those bench guys to score. Gordon was scoreless in 20 minutes. He has one job on this team. Eric Gordon shouldn't be playing 20 minutes if he's not shooting the ball. Like, he's got to make an impact. He's got to stretch the floor. He's got to get the – and, like, I get the – Jaden McDaniels, fantastic defender. Nikhil Alexander-Walker, fantastic defender. Anthony Edwards, fantastic perimeter defender. But what makes them fantastic, or what takes them to be the number one team in the defense or number one defense in the league, is that you have those perimeter guys, but then they also have that assurance that, like, that they can, if they get beat, that Rudy's going to be back there. So if Rudy's sitting in the corner, or if Rudy's on top of the key, like, Phoenix can attack and Phoenix can score. And I expect them to make those adjustments in game two. However, Grayson Allen being healthy is going to be that, like, the biggest piece of them being able to accomplish that feat, actually. And I'm not really sure if Allen's going to play. He's questionable right now. We haven't really heard any updates. When he got hurt, they went back big, which was surprising to me. When Allen left, they brought in Eubanks, and I was like, what are we doing? This game is over. I was like, you can't go to that. And even for, like, the score of 25-point win or whatever it was, this game was really close until that Anthony Edwards explosion. So if you can, like, stop him from turning into the best player on the court, I think this game will be a little bit closer, and it will be the pick'em that this sports books have him at.
Yeah, Suns are currently 3-point dogs for game two as it stands now. Grayson Allen, like you said, questionable. I mean, obviously that's part of the reason Eric Gordon played as much as he did with Grayson Allen going out after just 25 minutes. But they need Grayson Allen and Eric Gordon to knock down open threes, right? Those guys were a combined 0 of 7. I mean, Allen was terrible before he left the game. So that's a big part of it for Phoenix. I mean, personnel-wise, I think defensively, Minnesota matches up, I think, maybe a little bit better than I anticipated with the Suns. You know, Suns won this matchup 3-0 in the regular season, including, you know, two wins over Minnesota in the final week and a half of the regular season. So I think maybe that colored our opinion to a degree.
Those were all double-digit wins too, right?
They were. Yeah, one was a 10-point win, and then, you know, in game 82, they blew them out. You know, I think we have to keep in mind that if Phoenix wins tonight, you know, we're back to square one. You know, it's 1-1. We're heading back to Phoenix. They're probably back to being favored in this series. So I don't want to put too much stock into game one, but it was alarming offensively for the Suns, right? I mean, Kevin Durant did what he did, but Beal was relatively quiet. Like you said, Booker was not great. You know, you almost want Rudy Gobert on the floor, right? I mean, based on what we've seen from him in playoffs past, it's like, it's not like you necessarily want to play him off the court. You kind of want him out there to exploit, and Phoenix just really didn't do that. But they did get to the line 25 times. It's not like they weren't putting pressure on the rim. They weren't putting pressure on the Minnesota defense. I do think some of the underlying numbers for Phoenix are better than that final score would imply. So I think I'll be back in the Suns tonight. I haven't quite decided where I'm going to put my funds as far as allocating these three games, but we will go deeper on these on the RotoWire NBA show on SiriusXM later tonight. My guy, Alex Barutha, we'll have a guest joining us as well. So very much looking forward to that. Let's go Pacers Bucks. Milwaukee's a 1-point favorite right now for game one, which is a little surprising to me. They did close as dogs for game one. Game two, by the way, they're 1-point favorites, obviously. But based on how Milwaukee played without Giannis, I think that was a statement win, right? There's no other way to say it. I was nervous. I had no idea what to expect from Damian Lillard. You got a best case scenario first half from him. And, you know, it's not like Dame played poorly in the second half. He just wasn't nearly as aggressive as he was early on. The Bucks got, you know, a lot of contributions from Chris Middleton down the stretch, which was, I think, maybe even more encouraging than the Dame game, is that Chris Middleton still has that in him in a playoff situation. I think if you're the Bucks, and look, if we're talking about this, they're talking about this, Indiana's not starting the game 0 of 12 from three again, you know? So I don't think you could count on getting off to the start that Milwaukee did. And frankly, I thought they should have been up more after one quarter with how cold Indiana was. The Bucks were also cold to begin this game before Dame started heating up. Third quarter, Indiana got it going in game one. You know, they outscored Milwaukee by 15 in the third, made this somewhat of a game before Middleton kind of shut the door early in the fourth. But I think we get a much more competitive game tonight. You know, I don't think Miles Turner goes 5 of 17. I don't think Aaron Nesmith goes 1 of 7 from three. I think we get a more aggressive version of Tyrese Halliburton. And, you know, I'll be curious to see, you know, what does Indiana adjust on the defensive end against Damian Lillard? I thought they actually played him fairly well. I thought Dame was, you know, starting to attack in ways that we haven't necessarily seen when Giannis is out there. I mean, this to me truly was the first time all season And he's had plenty of good games, not trying to take anything away from Dame. But it was the first time all year that you're like, this looks like the Damian Lillard we saw in a Portland Trailblazers uniform in terms of the way he's creating his points.
Yeah, absolutely. In that first half, it kind of almost felt like an all-star game with the way it was, some of the shots he was taking. He was just coming over at half court, going off one screen and chucking it from deep. You got to love that. And I'm glad you gave Chris Middleton his flowers. 23 points on 14 shots, just efficient and lethal. When he's a third option, when Giannis comes back, this team's going to be really difficult. Patrick Beverley, team high 8 assists. That was pretty surprising. 7 of those came in the second half when they needed some offense with Dame. Like you said, he didn't need to score. He was 0 for 5 from the field, and he only had 1 assist and 2 turnovers in that second half. So, like, he wasn't overly aggressive. He also wasn't, like, facilitating. Maybe there was some hockey assists in there that, you know, where he passes it and then another pass to a corner, and he's not getting credit for that. So, yeah, really interesting second half there. I think the Pacers, this was kind of to be expected for me from the Pacers. Pascal is really like the only one with major postseason experience. So I was kind of expecting them to come in. You know, Giannis isn't there, but the rest of this team, they all have experience, right? Most of these guys played on that championship run. The Bucks have been in the playoffs for numerous years. This whole squad has postseason experience. They don't have postseason experience with Damian Lillard, but Lillard has his own experience and he can, you know, play his game and everyone will follow suit. I was really impressed with Milwaukee's bench in this game too, except for AJ Green. He only played 5 minutes, but aside from him, the rest of the bench went 5 for 11 from deep. Like, you're getting that kind of contributions from your bench. That's huge. Lopez had 3 blocks. Bobby Portis was being Bobby with Giannis out there with a double double. You mentioned the Pacers struggles to start the game from three. They finished 8 for 38 as a team. That's not great. Even if Giannis and Dame don't play, 8 for 38 isn't going to win you a lot of games. One encouraging thing, the Pacers won the rebounding battle barely, 50-47, but they dominated the offensive glass, 14-5. If the Pacers can keep doing that, they'll have a chance. And they're, you know, best time to shoot a three is off of an offensive rebound. So I feel like they continue to dominate the offensive glass. Those threes will continue. They'll continue to get good looks from three and maybe make some more. My biggest thing is Haliburton needs to be a scorer. I know when you're doing your prize picks read, you said Haliburton assist numbers. He can still be the facilitator. I like him in that role. The Pacers offense is great when he's facilitating, but I think the Bucks have a weakness guarding opposing point guards. You saw Brunson torch them this year. Haliburton has torched them this year. Haliburton needs to score. He needs to assert himself as a scorer, and then when they start focusing that attention, then he can start distributing. I know he struggled with his shot, so maybe that confidence isn't there, but Haliburton's going to have to be around that 20-25 point range per game if Indiana's going to have a chance to win this series.
So the reason I like Haliburton's assist tonight is he had 8 assists in game one. Didn't feel like he played well. Obviously, the Pacers didn't shoot it well. They were 6 of 31 on wide-open threes. Tyrese Haliburton had 20 potential assists. 20. That is a lot. 20 potential assists in game one. So you figure Indiana shoots the ball marginally better, and that number probably rises from 8 assists to 11 or 12 or even higher, depending on how well they're able to shoot it tonight. So that's kind of the line of thinking when it comes to Haliburton. I thought the Bucks did a pretty good job on him defensively, blitzing him, forcing the ball out of his hands. You know, I think that's maybe the one advantage they have by starting Pat Beverly is – he's more than happy to take on that assignment. Malik Beasley did a pretty decent job on him as well. But really, it comes down to the shooting for Indiana. I think it's going to be better in game two. I think the Bucks could talk themselves into shooting it better as well. You mentioned AJ Green. Obviously, a footnote in this game. You see how he only played 6 minutes. When AJ Green's out there, he has one job, and they're just hunting. They're hunting shots for him. It's the same thing when Kyle Korver at the end of his career was hanging on with the Cavs. It's like he's not out there to play 25 minutes. He's out there for short stints. And when he's there, you're looking to generate looks. And, I think AJ Green going 0 for 3 didn't impact the bottom line. But I think that's one area where the Bucks probably feel like they could get a little bit more in game two. All right, real quickly, let's do Mavs Clippers. This one really surprising to me. Alex and I went deep on this series on the pod yesterday. I thought Dallas just had this laid out in front of them, right? Kawhi Leonard out in game one. I even felt like if Kawhi played, I'm like, man, Dallas is just playing so well. Kyrie played all right. I would say Kyrie actually played well. When you say all right, I'm going to give him more credit. Luka, put up Luka numbers. The Mavs got just no contributions whatsoever from anybody else. Daniel Gafford had this weird quote where he's like, yeah, I just kind of felt like I was running around out there. Yeah, that's exactly what it looked like, pal. 14 minutes for Gafford, minus 8, 3 points, didn't even have a single rebound, didn't have a block. But Derek Jones didn't give them anything. You know, PJ Washington was very quiet. The bench, you know, basically every bench player got crushed when they were out there for the Mavs. And, you know, as of right now, we don't know if Kawhi Leonard's going to play. He's questionable, but he was at shoot around this morning. So it looks like he has a chance to get back tonight, which is a scary thought if you're the Mavs. This is one that I will say, Kieran, I don't know if it's a must win for me because I'm still pretty in on this Mavs team. I think when the series shifts back to Dallas, even if they're down 0-2, I could see them evening this thing up. But it 100% depends on what version of Kawhi we get. You know, is he out there looking like Joel Embiid? Then, you know, you feel pretty good if you're Dallas. Is he out there looking like full-on Kawhi, playing 38 minutes, shadowing Luka? Then the Mavs are in trouble.
I absolutely agree. And I think precedent says that Kawhi isn't going to play unless he can be that kind of guy. I feel like there's very often he comes back from an injury and maybe it takes him a game or two to be putting up 20 shots a game or whatever. But I think historically when he comes back, he's ready to go. Daniel Gafford, man, that's where this starts. He was the biggest reason for their turnaround. Their defense went through the roof after his acquisition, and 14 minutes. And that quote is hilarious and sad all at the same time. He needs to play better. Derek Lively returned from an absence and he was available. He only played 19 minutes. Maxi Kleba played 26 minutes. I feel like that was probably, we went down big. We need more scoring. So I feel like that'll hopefully change and we'll get more Gafford and Lively minutes, which should make the defense better. You said Luka and Kyrie played well. Looking at the box score, absolutely. They got theirs. They made it a little bit of a game in the second half, but they need to come out from the jump and they need to be assertive. I feel like they kind of play the, like, your turn, my turn, like, backyard, like, you know, pickup style. Like, we're going to be able to dominate because we're the two best players on the court. And so I need to see that, like, right away. It would be great for them to steal one. But like you said, going back home, I think this team would be pretty – Luka and Kyrie aren't going to have their confidence wane going back down 2-0 and coming home. So I like them to play a little bit better in this one, even if Kawhi is available. But it starts with that center position because the Clippers seem to make a concerted effort to get Zubac the ball early and often, and he dominated that matchup and played Gafford right off the floor. You were saying that Damian Lillard looked like Portland Dame. Well, James Harden looked like Houston James, right? Hitting step back threes, playing just fantastic ball. And then Westbrook played his role off the bench perfectly. 13 points, 4 boards, 4 assists, 2 steals. He was the energizer bunny. Terrence Mann continues to be solid. This is going to be a dogfight, no matter if Kawhi plays or not. If Kawhi doesn't play, I think I like Dallas stealing one here and going home with home court advantage. And then the last thing there is Paul George was inefficient, but I kind of liked the fact that he was so aggressive. I feel like since he's gone to the Clippers, he's kind of been passive and we haven't seen like him. This is probably a bad comparison, but like, I kind of want him to play like Kobe, like just be like, I can score anytime I touch the ball, you know, like, and when he's playing at that level, I feel like there's just more confidence and the ball moves around better instead of him just being like, I'm going to sit in the corner and I'm going to spot up and I'm going to shoot. Like, without Kawhi, we need you to be option number one. So I kind of like PG chucking 24, 25 shots, even if the game was like they were up a bunch and kind of like put it away early. But overall, the Mavs I don't think this is a must win. But if they do win this without Kawhi, I think Kawhi needs to come back ASAP for the Clippers to have a chance.
Yeah. Huge one for Dallas tonight. I'm with you on Paul George. Yeah. Just 8 of 20 shooting, you know, was not a fantastic night for him. 4 of 12 from three, but I think you like the aggression. 17 shots for Zubac. I don't think that's happening again. I think the Mavs need to be better inside. You went and loaded up at the deadline and in the draft on these big men. You can't be giving up 20 and 15 to Ivica Zubac in game one of a playoff series. But really, I mean, it was James Harden who brought this home for the Clippers. He was the best player on the floor for either team. And that's, you know, it hasn't been too often lately you could say that about James Harden in a playoff game. I thought this was one of the better playoff games given the situation of his entire career. Obviously, he's put up bigger numbers when he was with Houston, but the way he controlled the game, the way he controlled the pace, some of the tough shots he was hitting. And yeah, I think if you're Dallas, you know, he had 8 points in the second quarter, right? You made 31 total field goals. You had 14 assists in the games. Like, that is as bad as they've looked on offense for essentially the entire season. So I don't think you look at this like the Lakers, you know, like we talked about earlier, they come out of these first two games being like, man, we played fairly well and it wasn't enough. Like Dallas is like, look, we put forth one of our worst efforts of the entire year. We'll be better. I think they still have confidence. The Clippers also hit a ton of tough shots in game one. You know, not only were they 11 of 17 on wide open threes, which is by far the best mark any team had over the weekend, but they were 5 of 10 on tightly guarded threes. And a lot of those were James Harden. A couple of those were Paul George. And, you know, the Mavs made somewhat of a comeback late. You know, they outscored the Clippers by 14 over the final two quarters after, you know, getting blitzed in the first two. But it was George and it was Harden hitting those threes late that, you know, really ended up kind of icing this one for the Clippers. So I think there's a lot of reason if you're Dallas, you look at game one, you try to flush it as much as you can. I think the adjustments are pretty obvious. You expect that you'll shoot the ball better offensively. You expect that, you know, some of those step back threes for Harden maybe aren't falling in game two. So I'm still pretty firm on Dallas. They are 1.5 point dogs tonight. So we'll ultimately see, you know, how the status of Kawhi Leonard impacts that line. Anything else you want to get off your chest from these first 3 days of the NBA playoffs?
No, I'm just excited for it to keep on rolling. Last night was one of the most spectacular, like one of the, like the highlights, one of the best games, one of the best slates that I've experienced in a long time. There was multiple times where I had to like hit my girlfriend. I'm like, you got to watch this. Are you watching this? This is incredible entertainment right here. And even she's not a huge NBA fan, a huge basketball fan. And she was even like, whoa, this is kind of entertaining. So we're finally hitting that, that stretch where it's playoff basketball. We got the best players in the world going at it every night, nonstop. It's an exciting time to be an NBA fan. You did say that I am a Bucks fan. I'm no allegiance to the Bucks. I do live in Wisconsin, but I have no allegiance to the Bucks.
What's the deal there?
So I grew up in Arizona, like when Steve Nash was playing. So I was a big Suns fan. Ironically, no one in Phoenix is a Suns fan. They were all Lakers fans at that point because of Kobe. But so yeah, I grew up like a Steve Nash fan. And then ever since I moved from there, I've just kind of been like a fan of teams. I like the Bucks. When Giannis was, I liked the Bucks before they won the championship. Now that they had the championship, a lot of my friends are kind of annoying, so I kind of cheer against them every once in a while. But Giannis is awesome. K-Mid's awesome. When they traded for Dame, I was like, all right, here we go again. Bucks are going to be championship contenders for a while now, but no real allegiance in the NBA.
Okay. All right. Well, when I asked if you had to get anything off your chest, that's not what I was expecting, but I appreciate your transparency on that. I will be holding firm in that I do want the Bucks to win the NBA title. All right. We'll wrap it up here. Go check out Prize Picks. You heard it at the top of the show. Rotopod, Rotopod. That is the promo code. Go put that in on Prize Picks. You can go to prizepicks.com. Better yet, you can download the app. Use that code Rotopod, 100% deposit match. It's a fantastic deal, especially this time of year in the playoffs. Super fun to have a little extra skin in the game. You know, you're not overwhelmed with these 14 game slates where you're picking through all these projections. They have plenty of options, but when you're only dealing with two or three games, a little bit easier to narrow things down. And of course, go check out rotowire.com/picks where you can get some assistance finding the projections to target on Prize Picks. rotowire.com/picks, a ton of great tools there. We've gotten really, really good feedback on that. Our dev team knocked that out of the park. So rotowire.com/picks. If you're building those Prize Picks entries for the NBA playoffs, you can even throw in some MLB entries as well. You can mix and match. It doesn't have to just be basketball. Whatever's going on, Prize Picks is going to have those options for you.
It's happening daily. We're being conned by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media is distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the harsh realities facing American families. Time is short before something big happens, and that's why so many folks are preparing. They're becoming self-reliant by investing in emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure 4-week emergency food kits for each member of your family. Each kit contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Save $50 on each 4-week food kit you purchase. Plus, get free shipping on Ready Hour 4-week emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. At My Patriot Supply, you can also get solar power generators, water filtration units, heirloom seeds, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m. and your unmarked boxes ship the same day. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.